Super Nerd Podcast, the adventure that brings you the latest nerd news and rumors from movies, TV, entertainment, and sometimes science. You name it, if it is nerdy, we are talking about it. And tonight's main event is Ahsoka Season 1 Finale Nerd Out! I am your host, Austin, and with me, as always, is the amazing Mandalorian.
Hey!
And the wild yet elusive Jekka.
Hello! Yes, that was me screaming in excitement.
Amanda, haven't you caught on yet that whenever we do something Star Wars, I say amazing Mandalorian?
Yeah, but you drag it out so long, sometimes it's annoying.
It's not annoying, it's funny.
It's fun when you say, like, a Mandalorian, that's fun. But when you, like, are like, Amanda!
Okay, that's a little too loud, okay? All right, don't ham it up just because the spotlight's on you, Amanda, okay? All right, let's
move. I'm not wrong, and you know it.
Let's move on, because we are obviously talking all of Ahsoka Season 1, especially the finale tonight, and a whole lot more to include. Guess what, folks? Patrick Stewart is trying to convince Paramount to do a Star Trek Picard movie. We've got preliminary work being done on the MCU's X-Men movie, and we've got a James Bond reality TV show coming to Amazon. What in the world is going on? I'm your host, Austin. Yeah, you already know that. We said all this stuff. So make sure to hit that podcast subscribe button. We would love to nerd out with you each and every week. And if you already hit that podcast subscribe button, you know what I'm going to say to you. Plus 10 nerd XP.
Nerd XP.
We love you guys. If everyone else, as soon as you hit that podcast subscribe button, you too can start earning some nerd XP.
Nerd XP.
All right, Jack, I was nerdy with you.
I'm sorry.
No.
It's been that kind of week where I can't stop laughing after.
It's okay. Makes for a fun podcast.
I just can't. Okay. Whew. Okay. So for Ahsoka season finale, me and some of my friends who had been, well, one other friend, I had two friends who were both watching Ahsoka, and so I had told them, I was like, hey, for the season finale, we're going to have a watch party, we'll have snacks, nice. I'll get pizza, like, the whole thing, and we'll sit down, we'll watch Ahsoka and nerd out. One of my friends, unfortunately, had to bail because of a test she had on Wednesday that week, so she was just, like, super stressed, so that was a bummer. But my other friend still came, and he brought his housemate with him, who hadn't seen any of Ahsoka.
Okay.
The only Star Wars she had seen were the movies. And I would say even just like, you know, episodes 1 through 9. Like, those are the only ones she's seen. So it was really funny because she was like, I have no idea what's going on. But she was still enjoying it because she's an actress. Like, she's doing a bunch of taking acting classes. She wants to be on Broadway and all that. And so she was like, you know, analyzing it from like an actor's perspective, from like acting quality, stunts, and all that stuff. So she still enjoyed it. And then, like, after we finished it, the season finale, we showed her episode 5, which I'm totally going to talk about in the main event.
Yeah.
And that she was like, okay, that was cool. So it was really fun. And then I've also recently discovered the amazingness of Kickstarter and have backed a few projects, which I'm like, I really need to stop because like one of them I did was a plushie of the light dragon from Tears of the Kingdom. You nerds who have been playing Tears of the Kingdom, and it relates to the dragon glyphs quest where you have to go around, or the dragon tears quest with the geoglyphs. This plushie relates to it, but like I backed this project and it was one of those things where they had the option of a 2-foot dragon or a 3-foot dragon. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to pledge to get both. So I'm going to be getting the 2-foot and the 3-foot. I'll decide which one I want to keep. And the other one, I'm going to gift it to someone.
Awesome.
Very nice. Very cool. All right, Amanda. Oh, my word, dog.
Just don't breathe. Just keep talking and do
you
not
You know
breathe.
What? I got the Febreze. The dog crop dusted us. Oh boy. All right. So Amanda, what's nerdy with you?
So, all right. Apparently my life is to be shared on this beyond nerd
I was talking what we did yesterday.
Well, okay, so we've got...
But what you had told me before we started is still worth sharing with our
fans. Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
It's definitely super crazy.
So I'll share it in context of what was going on, because I think that's even worse. Okay, so my dad's been having car troubles and getting around, and there's been problems going on for the past couple of weeks. And Austin has been trying to get this D&D game going for, I think, 4 months now. Like, the end of the campaign we've been working on since December. So we had to get everybody together. We have one person that's going to be moving. So we wanted to make sure we did this before she moved so we could finish the campaign with everybody. And so he's like, it had to be yesterday. And Austin moved mountains to make sure it happened yesterday. So Friday night, I get a call from my dad. His car is broken down. And I'm like, well, do you need to stay with me? Because he lives an hour and a half away, and I'm not driving him there late at night and coming back. So I was like, you could stay with us, and we can make sure your car gets towed up there, get to a mechanic. And he's like, no, I'll stay with your sister. I'm like, okay, so he's going to stay with my sister. And things are going to be okay. My sister will take care of it. I'm very happy for my sister to take care of this project. So all day long throughout the Dungeons & Dragons campaign, I'm getting calls and texts from my sister about updates and like needing help with things. And it is very distracting as we're trying to like finish this up, and I'm having to run away from the game so I could deal with my dad's stuff. It ended up where the tow, he was supposed to get it. He started the request for the tow Friday. Saturday afternoon, he got the word that his truck was finally towed and was on its way to the mechanic.
Oh my gosh.
And my sister drives by the parking lot just to make sure everything went fine. And his truck is still sitting there. And so either the tow truck driver said he picked it up without picking it up, or they towed someone else's truck.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
And this is all happening while we're trying to do this D&D campaign that I'm dealing with this.
That's insane. Oh my gosh. I hope they were just doing that quintessential, you know, like, yeah, I'm on my way, even though they haven't, I'll be there in 5 minutes, but they haven't left yet. Instead of like, oh my gosh, I can't imagine if they actually towed someone else's truck. Can you imagine a person coming out being like, what the heck? Where's my truck?
It's not supposed to take 24 hours to pick up a truck.
Yeah, no, that is like, oh, ridiculous. That is crazy.
And so,
I mean, even if you're short staffed, like, not 24 hours, that is insane.
The worst part is I keep, like, trying to, like, say I'm doing something important to my family so that way they don't distract from the game. But at the same time, I don't think they would find it as important as I did.
Oh my gosh, that is so funny. No, my church congregation, like, they asked me if I would help out with the trunk or treat that's happening at the end of, like, the last Saturday before Halloween. And I was like, maybe I'll have to get back to you. I don't know if I'm doing D&D or not. I might be doing D&D, but I'll get back to you. And I could tell by her face, she was like, okay, but I'm like, no, this is serious. Like, so D&D versus trunk or treat, it's gonna be D&D. I'm sorry.
What you tell them, see, I've learned this because I tell this to my family all the time. I've got a really important activity
that may or may not be happening, and I'll need to check and make sure whether it's going to be happening on that day. Don't tell them what it is. If they don't do D&D, they don't understand.
Yeah, but see, here I'm just like, I don't know, I flaunt my nerdiness to everyone. I'm just like, yeah, I play D&D. I am that nerdy. So it is important to me, but yeah.
I flaunt it. But at the same time, when people like look at priorities, if they don't do D&D, they don't understand the priority.
Yeah, they don't understand how difficult it is to arrange a D&D session. Yeah. Pretty funny.
I just make it like, nope. I just hold to it. I'm just like, D&D's happening. Sorry.
Okay, so did you tell him? Sorry, I got slightly distracted by a text message. Did you tell her about the very end of the campaign session yesterday?
I did not.
Okay, all right. So
just
check
told me
this
the
out.
Car story. So yeah.
Oh my god.
Okay, so this is pretty funny. Okay, so I play with my daughter, my son, and two of their friends, and then Allison as well.
Amanda.
Sorry. Yes, Amanda. Jekka totally distracted me by doing this weird balloon thing on our video chat.
I didn't do that. I thought that was you.
I didn't do it. I don't know how it happened.
That was not me. I didn't touch a thing.
Zencaster's listening. Okay, anyway, so listen. So for about 2 years now, we've been doing this campaign on and off with all of them. And there's this dragon called Kyrovane. If you've ever played Dragons of Ice Spider Peak, you know what I'm talking about. But anyways, there's this dragon. It's been a harassment and a bane to the characters forever. They finally killed this dragon. And when they killed it, they completely... Come on over, Anakin, show Jekka. When they killed it, they finally... Actually, Anakin, why don't you explain what you guys did to the dragon after you killed this thing?
Okay, after we killed it, we basically just ripped it apart, taking body parts off of it.
They dissected this thing!
They performed a dragonoscopy.
Yeah, I mean, they're wanting to remove organs, rip out teeth and claws and horns and brains. Yeah, so you have to imagine like four kids ages like 11 to 14, all super giddy, like jumping up and down giddy to dissect this dragon. And it was utterly hilarious. So all right, good job, buddy.
So funny. That is so funny.
So I'm dealing with all my family stuff and trying to like handle this, and Austin won't let me leave. He won't let me leave. He's like, well, yeah, you have to be here for this. I'm like, no, I don't. They're just having an autopsy of a dragon. I can go. And he's like, no, you have to be here. I'm like, no, I don't want to be here for the dissection. Wow.
In my mind's eye, they basically kind of did what a Han Solo did to the Wampa on Hoth in Empire Strikes Back. But they're like swimming through the dragon. They're popping up. They're like, look what I found.
Oh my gosh.
It's just crazy.
My son has decided that brains are his character's trophy. And that he's collecting brains from all of the villains. Like that.
Oh my god!
All right. As crazy as it sounds, indeed.
Yeah, he does want his character to end up as a necromancer. So there's that.
Yeah, funny stuff. All right, we got a lot of nerd news to cover. So let's get into it.
Many Bothans died to bring us this information.
Ooh. And what is the news that should be on your nerd radar? Well, we are starting with some unfortunate news. Harry Potter's Michael Gambon has died. Sir Michael Gambon, renowned for his role as Professor Dumbledore in the Harry Potter series, has passed away at the age of 82. The esteemed Irish-British actor died peacefully from pneumonia while his wife, Anne, and son Fergus were by his side, per his family's statement. With a career spanning over six decades, Gambon debuted in Othello in 1965 and accumulated 148 film and TV credits. apart from his memorable role in the Harry Potter films succeeding Richard Harris, he starred in Josford Park, Fantastic Mr. Fox, and TV hits like The Singing Detective. Gambon was also recognized in stage productions, earning 13 awards. He was even knighted in 1998 for his contributions to entertainment. He secured the BAFTA for Best Actor 4 times, notably for The Singing Detective. And he leaves behind, unfortunately, his wife, Anne, son, Fergus, and 2 other children.
It's not unfortunately that he leaves them behind, but it is unfortunately that he passed.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. that is sad. I mean, like, I wasn't really a big fan of his portrayal of Dumbledore, but you know what? So he also was in the Doctor Who Christmas special, A Christmas Carol. And he did great in that. Like, that's like my favorite Doctor Who Christmas special, and Michael Gambon's in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is sad. Like, he was, like I said, I didn't really particularly like his portrayal of Dumbledore, but he was a good actor. I really liked his work that I have seen. So that's sad. That's a sad loss.
Sure. Ugh, yeah.
All my favorite actors, all the good actors, they're going.
And you got some people are looking at me. I'm sorry for his loss.
Okay.
We can move on. All right.
Yeah,
there's nothing more really to say.
Well,
he will be missed.
Getting into something a little more exciting. Patrick Stewart says he is trying to convince Paramount to do a Star Trek Picard movie. Patrick Stewart, famed for his role in Star Trek The Next Generation, is keen on having Paramount Pictures greenlight a Star Trek Picard film. He's been fervently urging the studio to bring the beloved character to the cinematic realm once again. In a conversation with Time magazine, Stewart expresses enthusiasm for reprising the role of Captain Jean-Luc Picard on the silver screen alongside his Enterprise colleagues. However, he envisions a unique take on it. He articulated, saying, quote, "I am gently pushing Paramount to let us do one single Picard movie, not a Next Generation movie, as we've already done 4 of those. This would be an expansion and deepening of the universe as we've seen it in Star Trek Picard. I've discussed this with Jonathan Franks, Brent Spiner, and LeVar Burton, and they are all game," end quote. So despite Paramount's assertion that the concluding season of Star Trek Picard marks the end for the Enterprise D team, the ensemble seems eager for another venture. Recalling his previous comments on a potential Picard film, Stewart said, quote, "I think we could do a movie, a Picard-based movie. Now, not necessarily at all about Picard, but about all of us. And to take many of those wonderful elements, particularly from season 3 of Picard, and take out what I think could be an extraordinary movie. I keep telling people and mentioning it, and so far there's been no eager response, but it might well happen. And that would be, I think, a very appropriate way to say and goodbye, folks."
I've said goodbye. I thought we were done.
Well, you know, it's interesting because he wants to do this movie, and Jonathan Franks is trying to talk about doing a Star Trek Legacy TV series. Sounds like they're really not done with Star Trek, and everybody wants back doing it some more.
I mean, Jonathan Franks has been doing a lot with Lower Decks.
Well, he likes doing a lot with Star Trek. He's been very, very integral with that.
I would say I'd be happy for a Picard movie if they tied it back to season 2. I really like season 2. I liked what was going on there. Agnes was awesome. All that stuff. I'd be happy if it tied back into that, you know?
All I know personally. Is...
that's where I'd be happy with a Picard movie.
For me, I felt the Picard series was the goodbye. And it's like...
They want an encore.
We want to do an encore, but people aren't cheering loud enough for an encore. and they don't seem to be really excited about an encore, but we want to do one.
I'm all for an encore TV series and an encore movie.
And I'm not too excited or thrilled.
It's Star Trek, and it's Jean-Luc Picard.
because you won't watch the other Star Trek series Earl that I want to watch. Like, you keep going back to these same people, and I want new stories. I want to watch.
What do you want to watch?
Let's see. We made it through season one of.
We need to get our room cleaned up and put that TV in there on the couch. That's what we need to do. Let's be honest.
So we finished.
So that way we can play more video games and watch TV.
The one where she's Spock's half sister.
Oh, Discovery.
Yeah. So we watched season one of Discovery, and we haven't made it past like the first episode of season two. And I'm like, I want to finish that.
Discovery is pretty good. Season one.
We made it through season one of Star Trek. It's the one with Captain Pike.
Amanda.
Oh, Strange New Worlds.
No one has a cooler name than Captain Jean-Luc Picard. Okay.
Austin.
That's the coolest name.
Austin hasn't even seen, we haven't even seen the latest season of Lower Decks.
Well, I don't know.
Okay, do you understand the problem having?
Why are we not?
I see that now because I'm sitting there. I'm like, ooh, you got to watch season two.
Yeah, Strange New World. I want to watch other Star Trek Lower Decks.
Amanda,
I love Star Trek.
Why are you trying to make us watch Community when we could be watching Lower Decks?
Because you got rid of our Paramount account.
Well, we can get that back. That's easy. All right, let's move on. Guess what, folks? We just started Loki season two, but Loki season three might have Thor. So if you've ever wondered if Tom Hiddleston's Loki would ever once again share the screen with Chris Hemsworth's Thor, well, that just might actually happen because in a conversation with Variety, executive producer of Loki, Kevin Wright, had the following to say, quote, "That's the hope. I don't want to, I think the sun shining on Loki and Thor once again has always been the priority of the story we are telling. But for that meeting to really be fulfilling, we have to get Loki to a certain place emotionally. I think that's been the goal of these two seasons," end quote. So the last time Loki and Thor were together on the screen was in the 2018 film Avengers Infinity Wars, its initial scene, a poignant moment when Thanos executes Loki in Thor's presence. Considering the transformations both characters have undergone, their reunion promises a fresh dynamic. Just imagine Thor flaunting his Loki Rest in Peace tattoo. And additionally, Wright mentioned that the second season, comprised of 6 episodes, will have an, quote, open-ended conclusion. He hinted at the potential for a third season, saying, quote, "We certainly did not develop this season going, we have to set up season 3 in the way that we did with season 1, where there was a very specific, hey, we're coming back. But I also think that where the show goes, there certainly can be many, many, many more stories told with Loki in the Loki world and in other worlds connected to the Loki character." So Loki season 2 made its debut just a few days ago on Disney Plus, and we will be talking about Loki next podcast. What do you think of this?
I feel like that's a very gutsy thing to do, considering that Disney is being finicky with like Disney Plus shows kind of thing. That's very gutsy to be like, we're purposely leaving it open for a season 3, you know?
Well, I think
even just the potential, I'm like, that's very gutsy to do that.
Do you know why? Here's my theory. Because Disney Plus is hurting a little bit, I think they're trying to get fan support already jumping on board for a new season. Because otherwise, I don't know if there'll be another season. I mean, we're going to talk about Ahsoka later, but even Ahsoka season 2 has not been greenlit yet.
Honestly,
there's only talk.
I think the biggest tragedy of season 1 is we didn't have any Thor variants. So I really, really want to see
that'd be
some
pretty fun.
Thor
that
variants.
Would be funny to get some Thor variants.
Like you have a Thor played by Chris Hemsworth that is completely different than normal Thor.
Oh my gosh! What if there was a Thor played by Liam Hemsworth?
Could we have?
That would be so funny.
So I don't
Can
remember
we get an alligator Thor for the alligator Loki.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so
Crocodile Thor to help the alligator Loki.
There was actually a deleted scene, I believe, in season one that had Loki getting beat up by a frog Thor. So you guys seem to approve of that, so
I do. Like, I mean, that was the other thing. You know, I was like, "Hey, Gutsy's saying like we want to do a season three," but at the same time, I'm like, "That'd be really fun to have Thor in there." Like, not only, you know, a very like touching scene where they're like reunited with Loki, like knowing what happened, or like, you know, through their journey. I mean, granted, I can't really work much with what they're saying because, you know, season two just started, and I've been diving deep in the Ahsoka hole, like there, rabbit hole. So
Loki has gone through such a pop culture shift. I remember when he was the main villain for the first Avengers film, I remember before it came out saying to myself, like, is he a big enough villain for this type of movie they're trying to pull off? And he's really captured pop culture's interest a lot more since those days. But,
well, and Tom Hiddleston is just like, amazing. He like plays him so well.
He does
such a good job.
All right, moving on. Check this out. Preliminary work is starting for the MCU's X-Men movie.
About time.
With the conclusion of the writer's strike, several projects are gearing up for development, and among the most anticipated is the new X-Men movie. So Deadline, a very reputable source, is reporting that Marvel Studio executives are preparing to commence meetings this fall to scout for a script writer for the X-Men project. While it might seem premature, given that a final decision is projected for early 2024 on the screenwriters, the buzz around the potential movie is significant. The upcoming X-Men movie marks the first substantial development news after Disney's 2019 acquisition of Fox, encompassing all associated Marvel rights. Although audiences have glimpsed Patrick Stewart's Professor X in the recent Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness and are eagerly awaiting Hugh Jackman's Wolverine in Deadpool 3, specifics on a standalone X-Men film have been minimal, probably because they don't have a screenwriter yet. But in addition to this, in Deadpool 3, we will witness Hugh Jackman reprising his iconic role as Wolverine, sharing screen time with Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool. However, here's where we're getting a little bit of news. This is probably in the rumor a little bit, but take it with a grain of salt. But however, those hoping to see Wolverine seamlessly transition to this forthcoming X-Men movie might be in for a surprise. Insider sources suggest that Wolverine won't immediately join the new X-Men ensemble. Instead, this might be, if the rumor's correct, this might be a spoiler warning for Deadpool 3. So just be warned. Instead, Deadpool 3 is set to apparently maroon Wolverine on Earth 616, positioning him as a pivotal character in Avengers, the Kang Dynasty, and Avengers Secret Wars. Consequently, the inaugural lineup for the X-Men film might not feature the beloved Wolverine.
That's perfect. That's awesome.
So how what do you make of all this? How do we dissect this news?
So Wolverine has fought with the Avengers before, and this is great. I'm really hoping that the first X-Men movie, well, okay, I don't know exactly what I hope with the first X-Men movie, but I really want them to get it to where they're both in the same world eventually. And I'm hoping that they can do that with the Kang Dynasty Avengers movies, get them to the same world. But I'm really sad with this because then my biggest hope for the Marvels is being crushed right now. Because Rogue gets her powers by stealing them from Carol Danvers.
Like why would they not be able to do that still?
Because the X-Men are supposed to be on a different multiverse world.
So that's what we're getting out of this. I was wondering about that. We're gonna get an X-Men movie in a completely different Earth than all of the MCU so far, basically.
Yes, that's what I'm reading.
I I don't know if I like that.
I'm not liking that either because,
well,
like, I've been, like, looking for Easter eggs with, like, X-Men show up in the background. Like, maybe some Rogue, like, Rogue kind of shows up in the background of the Marvels. Like, it
yes, would but
be
we need,
really
we
great.
Need.
But they did with, especially with Ms. Marvel, where they do that little X-Men.
We need, I'll tell you why I don't like this. Because we need an Avengers versus X-Men movie. Which, just like they did in the comics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We need that.
Yeah.
And I want well, I get okay, there's two ways of looking at this. It could be a fresh start for Marvel, who's starting to get a little complicated with all the projects they've got going on and following the storyline. And so it could be a fresh start. Maybe that's nice with X-Men. But then the downside, and I think I'm leaning more towards this, is that we've invested so much time in the MCU so far. I don't want necessarily a brand new one. I want to continue this story we've been on for what 15 years now.
Well, and that's what I was hoping with the Ms. Marvel like X-Men music in it was that they were going to show like mutants in hiding and slowly bring mutants to the forefront. That the X-Men have been there all along. They just don't want to be seen because they don't want mutants to be a big issue in society. So that's what I was really hoping for. And I'm really cool if they keep X-Men on Earth 616 with the Avengers and have Wolverine start with the Avengers. That makes perfect sense. He's done that. And then he goes to the X-Men in X-Men versus Avengers.
So, do you think we're getting Hugh Jackman in the MCU after all?
I don't think so, because it sounded like before he was only coming back for Deadpool 3. Like, it sounded like he was done with Wolverine.
Well,
as much as Hugh Jackman has, like, really embodied that character of Wolverine, and, like, I really can't think of anyone else playing Wolverine, I would like to see some, like, a recast for Wolverine, you know?
What they could do is they could... They actually could have Wolverine versus Wolverine with Wolverine stranded in Earth 616 meeting his counterpart Wolverine in Earth 616.
That would be a great way to like hand off the baton, more like hand off the actor or the character.
Yeah, and that could be cool.
Yeah.
But I want to see X-Men in the same universe as the Avengers. That's what I want.
Yeah.
I want Rogue showing up in the background of the Marvels, like slowly sneaking up, maybe befriending Carol Danvers a little bit. Because that's what she does. Or not necessarily that she befriends her in the comics necessarily, but that she gets close enough to touch her long enough to basically permanently steal her powers.
Yeah.
All right, moving on.
Yes, Amanda. Yes.
Yes.
James Gunn says Peacemaker Season 2 will connect to the DCU. James Gunn, CEO of DC Studios, has officially announced his ongoing work on the script for Peacemaker Season 2. The revelation came when Gunn posted a behind-the-scenes video from the inaugural season of Peacemaker on Instagram. When inquired by a fan regarding the next season, Gunn's response was succinct. Quote, writing it now. End quote. Another fan questioned if the upcoming season will be integrated into the refreshed DC Universe continuity. To this, Gunn affirmed yes and yes. End quote. Gunn's work ethic is noteworthy given his multifaceted role in Hollywood. Apart from helming a major studio, his creative portfolio boosts projects like Creature Commandos, Superman Legacy, Peacemaker, and an Amanda Waller spinoff. Additionally, he remains an active presence on social media. Although specifics about the storyline for the second season remain under wraps, Gunn hinted at integrating more crossover elements in the episodes ahead. He expressed, quote, expect to see increased interconnectivity with Peacemaker and other HBO Max series. While cameo appearances will persist, it's uncertain if the Justice Leagues featured in the first season will be a recurring event or just a singular event. John Cena does return as Peacemaker, and we have no idea when Peacemaker season 2 is coming out.
So I have to say this because the marketing was so fabulous for Peacemaker season 1 that every time I hear Peacemaker, I think of the license plate in the just the picture where it looks like instead of Peacemaker, it's Pissmaker.
I don't remember that.
Yes, there was this license plate. And so now every time I hear Peacemaker, I think you of think the of license that. Plate. So I have a hard time, but I love it because the storyline is hilarious. It really is a guy just trying to do his best and just really screwing things up.
I'm trying to... I was actually thinking about this the other day. I was like, didn't the finale of season 1 Peacemaker have the Justice League showed up? And they had...
No, it wasn't the Justice League.
Yeah, it was.
It was the Justice Society.
No, it was Justice League. Because they had... I'm pretty sure they had Superman there. They just didn't show him. But they had... They had the actor that plays Aquaman. I'm brain farting his name right now.
Jason Momoa.
Yeah, Jason Momoa was in it. Okay. And so here's the thing. Like, when you go from season 1 to season 2, unless a suspension of disbelief by the audience.
There's a lot of that with Peacemaker anyway.
Yeah, but are they going to try... Are they going to try to sneak under the rug season 1 in as if it's in the new DCU? Yeah. I say all that to lead to, does that mean that Jason Momoa will be in the DCU moving forward? I mean, we've got the other DCU Aquaman coming out, but that isn't necessarily in this new DCU. I don't know. We'll see.
I hope so. Like, I'm not a fan of the Aquaman movies, but Jason Momoa has done a good job.
I agree.
I think he does a good Aquaman. Mm-hmm. I just didn't care for the movies. And that's not his fault whatsoever.
Yep. All right, moving on. We're getting a lot of that tonight. Check this out. This is just weird. A James Bond reality TV show is coming to Amazon Prime. That's right. Prime Video has unveiled the first trailer for its new James Bond themed reality TV show called 007 Road to a Million. Surprisingly, the iconic Bond franchise has taken this direction. Brian Cox from Succession headlines the show, overseeing the journey of contestants as they embark on a global Bond-esque race with an enticing £1 million prize at the finish line. So that comes out to $1.2 million. Their route includes stops at 007 famous locations like the Scottish Highlands, Venice, and Jamaica. 9 teams of 2 aspire to channel their inner Bond, face challenges influenced by the renowned spy. Cox intriguingly notes, quote, "I immerse real individuals in a James Bond escapade with a $1 million or £1 million at stake. Their primary obstacle, yours truly." So, the reason why this even exists is because it is a joint venture between Eon Studios and Amazon Studios, 72 Film, and MGM, which Amazon purchased. So that is why they're trying to bring Bond to the Amazon Prime. But this is just a weird way to do it, in my opinion. Anyways, 007 Road to a Million premieres on Amazon Prime November 10th. Let's take a listen to this trailer and we'll talk about it afterwards. Here we go.
I put real people into a James Bond adventure to win £1 million.
£1 million, Matt. What wouldn't you do?
Climb the crane? No.
Oh, hello.
The only thing standing in their way is me.
Alrighty.
I find it, like, the trailer, I find it really hard to believe it's a reality TV show. Like, just, I don't know. These people, well, I was like, they don't seem like normal people. I don't know. I think maybe it was just like the audio they chose. It just made them sound like actors and not actual, like, your everyday Joe.
Was it the British accents that probably threw you off?
No, it wasn't that. It really was the dialogue.
Okay.
Like, it really was the dialogue.
Well, the cinematography is the quality of a Bond film.
Yeah,
That's what makes it look like a Bond film, even though it's a reality TV show. I just think this whole thing is weird.
Yeah, I am
I'll probably still intrigued watch it,
enough. Like, I am not one to watch. Me too. I don't watch reality TV shows. I can't stand them. They drive me crazy. But I am intrigued enough to watch this. Well, or at least give the first episode a go and see how I feel after that.
I will say this. So you guys are way more in than I am. Because I don't like watching reality TV shows either.
Wait, we've watched some reality TV shows before.
We have.
I've seen episodes.
You know, I've seen episodes, but I haven't, like, watched it. I plan on watching this every week as it comes out. That's what I mean by watching.
We got sucked into that one. What was it? The judges? America's Got Talent.
America's Got Talent for a while.
We did.
But the thing is it almost brings me in, but it's just not my time. I've got one or two reality TV shows that I would watch, and this isn't it for me.
Yeah, I'm just like, and the other thing too, I was like, and this is always my thing with these reality shows that are like game shows kind of thing, like Amazing Race kind of thing, The Great Race or whatever, is like, where the heck are they getting £1 million? I'm like, what the heck? Where is that coming from?
Well, that's because millions of pounds anyway. Like, it costs so much for these productions that, that's just part of the production cost.
So crazy to me. So crazy.
I will say this. I do like the premise that the celebrity host is their adversary.
Is the villain. Yeah,
I like that premise a lot.
Yeah.
Well, 007 Road to a Million comes out November 10th. I'll probably check it out, but I don't want them to dilute Bond. Oh, check this out. Bond related. This is rumor, but a lot of people are reporting this. For a long, long time now, I mean a long time, well over a decade, Christopher Nolan has been, talking about how he's always wanted to direct a James Bond film, and he talks about it all the time. Well, apparently, according to all rumors, and there's a whole bunch, Christopher Nolan is in talks to direct not one but two Bond films. Ooh. And this is where things are a little different. I think they're doing this because they're introducing a new Bond. He wants to do a period set Bond film, like maybe going back to the 60s or 70s or something. That would be pretty interesting if you ask me.
That would be pretty
cool. I'd be up for that. I'd be up for that. So, all right, we got some more to talk about. So let's talk Ahsoka.
We had our honeymoon on Alderaan.
Good thing we took pictures, huh?
Shut up, Wesley.
You have no idea what you're dealing with.
Shakespeare in the Park.
And that bell means it is time for our main event, Ahsoka, season one finale, Nerd Out!
War is inevitable. One must destroy in order to create. We are no Jedi.
I started hearing whispers of Thrawn's return as heir to the Empire.
What happens when we find Thrawn?
Power, such as you've never dreamed.
I've spent most of my life fighting a war. That's why I'm trying to convince you to help me prevent another one.
You and I both know who could help you with this.
She's still just as stubborn as ever.
I bet your master found you difficult at times.
Anakin never got to finish my training. I walked away from him, just like I walked away from Sabine. You never made things easy for me, Master.
As a Jedi, sometimes you have to make the decision no one else can. But I'm counting on you to see this through.
Nice haircut. Sometimes we have to do what's right, regardless of our personal feelings.
Buckle up.
If we don't stop Thrawn, everything will be in vain. You have no power.
Anakin spoke highly of you.
I'm not here to discuss my past.
We have a lot of work to do.
Once a rebel, always a rebel.
Special shout out to all you super nerds who have hit that podcast subscribe button. We really, really appreciate you. Please help us get the word out. Tell a friend about the podcast. And I want to invite you to hit that podcast subscribe button already. Come on, do it. You'll get plus 10 nerd XP. All right, Ahsoka. We have finished season one of...
And there better be a season two.
Of Dave Filoni's masterpiece. Well, yeah,
Or will it just be a movie?
Well...
I mean, I would settle for a movie, but...
Is
it new territory yet? I don't know, but yeah.
Okay, first off, this is Dave Filoni's first... real TV show live action. I mean, I know he's done all the other stuff and Mandalorian, but like this is his baby, let's be honest. And some people I've been watching online. Some people have been criticizing the show because maybe it's not quite what they were expecting, or they wanted something else, like maybe Ahsoka was a little too grumpy at the beginning, and I don't know, just different small things like that. In all reality, of all of the Star Wars TV shows that have come out on Disney Plus, live action, I think Ahsoka was the best. I think it was better than the Mandalorian. Maybe Mandalorian has an easier entry barrier for people that don't really follow any of this, but I don't think this was so bad that people couldn't jump into it and watch it. Just like you said, your friend was enjoying it. But I thought this was the best. Room for improvement, maybe in some areas, but like I mean, no Star Wars is perfect. I mean, even Episode 4 had a stormtrooper hitting his head on the door. Like, I think people nitpick way too much. They focus on the bad. Ahsoka was great.
Yeah, I loved Ahsoka. I think my only complaint, and one of my friends shared this with me too. Marilyn, if she ever listens to this, our podcast. Like, we both agree that if anything, our one complaint was there was a lot of focus on Sabine. And like, I was like, okay, I get it that Ahsoka is like kind of a season five Rebels. But like, as I kept watching it, and like all the times when Sabine came up, I was just like, okay, that's great and all, but let's get to Ahsoka, especially after episode 5. I was like, just give me more Ahsoka. So that was like my one complaint. Like, I feel like,
well,
like Ahsoka was there and present, but it was almost like, it was almost like things were moving around her.
I could see that.
What came to my mind is almost like the Princess Bride, and I only like come to this because I read the book by Cary Elwes called As You Wish. Highly recommend it. But anyways, he talks about how like in the Princess Bride, Buttercup is the main character. Everything's about her, but she's not really playing an active role. Like, everything is swirling around her, and like the events are like, she is responding to events, but she's not like an active role in them. And that's kind of how I felt Ahsoka was. to an extent. Like, they're definitely, like, she did become more active after episode 5. I don't know how to explain what I'm saying, but that's my only.
I get what you're saying. Yeah. I get what you're saying. You know, I did use a little bit of headcanon to flesh out some of the scenes. And I think we were, you know, we got enough meat in the episodes to communicate this. But I did flesh it out just a little bit more in my mind, specifically when it comes to Ahsoka's character growth throughout all of this season one. Because it really kind of came to fruition what direction they were going in episode 5 with Anakin and Ahsoka in World Between Worlds. Basically, long story short, she has to be thinking all these years. Again, this is a little bit headcanon, and they could have showed this a little bit more, but all these years, she's got to be thinking, what would have happened to Anakin had I not left the Order, had mm-hmm. I not left his side? And so they could have played that up a little bit more. And then they could have played up, well, I did leave. And because I did leave, look what happened to Anakin. Then you get to the World Between Worlds. And you know, here's Anakin trying to teach her this lesson. Do you want to live or do you want to die? But you need, I think they could have added just a little bit more meat to why she wanted to live. Because if they set up, well, I left Anakin, look what happened. They could have set up, look, if you die, you will be leaving. You'll be redoing the exact same mistake that's been plaguing you all these years by leaving.
Sabine and everyone
Sabine,
else.
By leaving Ezra, all this stuff. And so when they finally get to the point that he is, when they finally get to the point that she recognizes, yes, I do have to be committed to living so I can save Ezra, and you connect that and save Sabine, and you connect that to her basically correcting her choice for when she left the Order, when she left Anakin, that her life moving forward is as if she had chose to stay. And then she gets to play out her future as in what would have happened if I did stay with Anakin. And so I think they were kind of trying to get to that a little bit, but it wasn't quite as super obvious as me just trying to explain it. And it reminds me, and there was another scene. There was another scene with Thrawn in which, I'll just say this real quick.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, this is all spoiler alert. You know, when Morgan was like, I don't see how we benefit from this. All of our enemies are reunited, and they did a little bit better job of saying this. You know, Thrawn basically said, "Hey, look, this is what you see. Okay, let me see. Our goal is to get out of here. Ahsoka and everybody came looking for a fight. Guess what? We gave them a fight, but we gave them a fight on the terms that we wanted. And guess what? That fight was a complete distraction because they're over here winning this this insignificant victory while we're about ready to leave. And we've had no interruptions with them here. And so because we gave them that fight and they're completely distracted, we're about ready to leave. We're winning." And they did a little bit better job of trying to explain that.
Yeah, no, I know exactly the part you're talking about. 'Cause that was one of those moments where I was just like squealing in my seat.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Yeah.
In the air and being like, yeah, go Thrawn. You know?
Exactly. Like, exactly. And so Dave Filoni had these two kind of pivotal scenes that were like a little instrumental to showing where these characters were with Ahsoka, with Thrawn, or introducing Thrawn as this big baddie that outsmarts everybody. And it reminded me of a behind the scenes video I saw of Star Wars: The Clone Wars. So, and if I could find it, I would link to it. But I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember it very, very clearly. So Dave Filoni was explaining something to George Lucas, and George Lucas was in like a straight up master and apprentice Padawan role at this moment in this video. Dave was explaining to George what's going on in the scene, and in typical Dave fashion, he's deep diving, he's finding the nuances, he's explaining the feelings and all this stuff, and it's exactly what this scene needs to be. And then at the very end of Dave explaining this, George looks at Dave and he says very poignantly, "That's perfect. Now say that in this," meaning like that needs to be shown in the episode clearly, so that way the audience doesn't need you standing here explaining it just like you explained it to me. Put that in here. And so I feel like, you know, in the animation, like I think like Dave had that nailed. Like he did that really well in Clone Wars and in Rebels. And these two examples of I just shared with Ahsoka and Thrawn, like they weren't as put that in here as maybe Dave has done in animation. And I'm wondering if that was for a couple reasons. One, is it because it's live action? And two, Dave doesn't have complete and utter control over this like he did over the TV animated series, because he's got all these different directors doing the job. And so anyway, so these are some things I noticed. These were not even close to make or break for me. These are just things that I'm noticing. I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that was just my one complaint, and thank you for kind of like clarifying all that. But the rest of it, like, I was actually like rewatching episode, like the first episode. I meant to like start rewatch all of it before we talked about it, because, you know, it had been a few weeks since episode one. I keep like, yeah, I don't, so many things. So I went and rewatched episode. I'm actually halfway through episode one before I caused it to jump on this, which is fine. But, you know, it's like, I'm even then like rewatching, I was just like, you know, snuggling down and all excited. But Thrawn, yeah. Because that was the other thing my friend Marilyn said that she absolutely liked about Thrawn, was how strategic he was. Like, she was like, that was so cool. I don't know if she's seen Rebels. I don't think she has.
Which scene of Thrawn's? Was it the one I was just explaining?
I think so. It was that you were explaining. Yeah. I think just the whole thing with Thrawn, how he's just like giving them fights to keep them, like to delay them, to get them thinking that they're making progress when in reality they aren't. Which is like Lars Mikkelsen, like, you know, he voices Thrawn. He did a fantastic job of like capturing his persona.
Thrawn's entrance. Oh my word. One of the best entrances in all of Star Wars.
Can I just say?
Not as good as the Emperor's in episode six, but oh man, it was good. Yeah,
it was so good. And the fact that he came walking in and he's working pretty much with these Night Sisters, I was just like squealing in my seat, nerding out. I was just like, oh my gosh, the like biggest threat to the New Republic has the Night Sisters, the Witches of Dathomir, at his beck and call. They're loyal to him. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is insane. I was like, this is such bad news. I love it.
I was not expecting Night Sisters to show up in this. So that was a big surprise.
And that's the big thing about Star Wars that I've realized. Like, the three things I like about the Star Wars universe, first and foremost being Ahsoka Tano. Second is Thrawn. And then the Witches of Dathomir. Ooh. Like, any episodes of Clone Wars and Rebels that deals with the Witches of Dathomir, I'm just like, yes. Like, here's a genuine dangerous foe to the Jedi, you know?
Mm-hmm.
More so than the Sith. Like, I mean, they're on par with the Sith. Sorry. I will rephrase that. To me, they're on par with the Sith, like, to me. Like, they're just as dangerous, you know? And the fact that all three of those are in this TV show, I was just my little Star Wars fan heart was bursting.
Oh, sure. All right, so
I was nerding out so much.
So here's some thoughts I had. So I think it would be a safe assumption to say that Disney, their Star Wars plan includes basically doing an Heir to the Empire movie. And or a storyline throughout all of the Star Wars you know, properties that they got going on. So if they're doing that, like I'm thinking, you know, in Heir to the Empire, the book, Thrawn basically discovering the Dreadnought fleet was kind of a big tool for his disposal.
Yes.
I am wondering, back to the book. When he brought that Dreadnought fleet in, it kind of surprised all of the galaxy. Like, wait a minute, where did this come from? I am wondering if what Thrawn is bringing on to his Star Destroyer, all those coffins, is going to be the equivalent of the Dreadnought fleet that comes in and surprises everything at Thrawn's disposal. And they don't necessarily say what those boxes or coffins are, but if I had to make a guess,
I'm with you there. In fact, I'm glad that you said coffins, because it was until I was watching like that one of the final scenes when it's like showing the rose, I was like, those look like coffins.
They do.
Yeah. I was just like, he brought coffins on. And with that many, I'm like, oh boy, this is not good.
So here's some thoughts. Okay. What are these coffins and what is Thrawn's motivation behind this? Okay. So Thrawn mentioned a couple times that he is not going to underestimate a force user adversary. He's already been burned once. It will never happen again. I think that's part of the reason why he's allied so closely with the Night Sisters. And I think that motivation will continue onward. And that makes him a real threat to the galaxy when there isn't a Jedi Order really up and running. And so I think these coffins are one of two things. I think they're dead ancient Night Sisters.
I think
makes a lot of sense. Or the other thought I had is maybe they're dead ancient Sith. And the reason why I kind of thought that is when you jump all the way to episode 9, we find out that there are a whole bunch of Sith Eternals in episode 9 that kind of worked, that did the work to resurrect Palpatine. And you know, I know we don't talk a lot about the sequel trilogy for a reason. But where in the world did all these Sith Eternals come from? I mean, it looks like they're not at like Palpatine Vader level Sith, but apparently Sith to the extent that they understand Sith knowledge and working and all that stuff. And so and here's the other thing, like how did they get to that? Well, all throughout the Ahsoka series, what are we watching? We're watching the Night Sisters having some level of control over death. You know, I can save people from death. It's not quite at the same, it's not like at the resurrection level, but it's more at like the zombie whatever level.
Yeah.
But maybe that combined with what the Sith are learning, that's how you get resurrected Palpatine going on. And so there's like all, and then you've got what's going on in the Mandalorian. You've got Moff Gideon trying to learn how to make basically force sensitive clone body. Yeah. Like you can combine all these things together and you can start seeing maybe if I'm correct, some of the pieces being filled in that the sequel trilogy kind of introduced. I don't know, but I mean, it very well could just be a whole bunch of Night Sisters. And then you introduce a bunch of Night Sisters in the galaxy. And so you have all, maybe the Night Sisters are like the equivalent of the new Star Wars Disney canon's Dreadnoughts. I don't know. All sorts of cool stuff.
I know. So many cool stuff.
So yeah, lots of theories. Any of it true? I don't know.
I don't know either. Yeah. I'm trying to see when would be a time to I'll say that at the end. Anyways, and in my like, Baylan.
Oh yeah, we gotta talk about Baylan for sure.
Yeah.
Baylan and Shin Hati.
Shin, yeah. Oh man. That part when he like kind of told her, pretty much said, like, we're parting ways, I'm staying here, you go back and go with Thrawn. he's like, your future's with the Empire and all that. And like Shin's face, I was just like, oh, she mad.
That didn't make sense to me. Like, why are we doing this? Because I really liked the Shin and Baylan team, even though they were, you know, adversaries. I liked them together.
I did too, but I really liked how it came. It continued, because if you remember, like, Shin stays. She doesn't go with Thrawn.
Yeah.
Like, she goes back, but then she leaves, and she stays on the planet, you know? And so I as much as it didn't make sense that Baylan was kind of like, yeah, our paths are, we're done, we're crossed, like, we're going our separate ways, I liked that. At the same time, I liked that because then it kind of tied into what was going on with Ahsoka and Sabine. It was like a parallel thing where it was like Ahsoka and Sabine were finally starting to work together, starting to really understand each other and get along and like really build that master apprentice, you know, master Padawan bond. With the fact that like Sabine chose to stay with Ahsoka and help her instead of going with Ezra, you know, and returning to their galaxy. And so I kind of like that Shin, even though she had that same opportunity, she made the similar decision that she was going to stay on the same planet as her master. Like,
why did she make that decision though? Like what do you think of that?
I guess. See, I just think that like she's just loyal to Baylan. And like, even though Baylan's like, I've taught you everything, like she feels like, no, it's so she wants to like keep going with him. That's like, honestly didn't read too much into it. I just like that parallel that was happening.
I'm wondering, okay, so if Baylan senses a thirst for power, and that's a big driving motivation for her, then if Baylan's going for like this unbelievable power beyond imagination, then why would she leave? Why would she leave with Thrawn? Maybe initially she thought that power was Thrawn and what he could introduce, but if she's watching Baylan say, nope, you go do that, I'm gonna go for this real power, maybe she's like, well, maybe I gotta stay for that reason. I don't know.
Yeah.
Amanda? You don't know?
I don't know. I'm not feeling good. Sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay.
It's all good. I'll read something that my other friend, Zach, who was attended the watch party.
Yeah.
So I want to share his thoughts. It's kind of long, but literally, I was like, hey, what are your thoughts? I'm going to share it on the podcast. So this is to Zach. So here's what he says. A lot of really great recent Star Wars content, Rogue One, Mandalorian Season 2, even Clone Wars Season 7 to a degree, climax in these big epic hallway scenes, with a force wielder slaughtering a whole bunch of enemies in a confined hallway. It's epic. It's great. It's awesome. Ahsoka starts with a big epic hallway scene and only gets better from there. Which, rewatching this first episode, I was like, oh yeah, definitely. Wholeheartedly agree, Zach. But overall, I absolutely loved it. I'd say either tied or a close second to Andor as my favorite Disney Star Wars show. The writing and action were terrific. I only had a few minor complaints. I loved the heavy mythological inspiration throughout the entire series. Soundtrack was amazing, all caps. I do wish more of the plot threads were wrapped up in the season finale, but I suppose that's all the more to look forward to season 2 and the Dave Filoni film that I've heard is being planned. So much to fit in a text, but overall, I loved it.
Yeah.
So thanks, Zach, plus 10 Nerd XP. I mainly I've been telling him that there's like talk of like a Dave Filoni doing a film kind of thing. So I've been telling him that. And that's kind of like my thing is, I do want a second season of Ahsoka, because a film, I'd want the film to be like a climactic confrontation event with Thrawn, kind of like Return of the Jedi. It's kind of unless like Filoni's going to do a trilogy, a movie trilogy, which would be, yes, please, let's have that. But if not, if it's just going to be like one film to wrap up this Thrawn plot that he's creating, I'd want it to be the equivalent. I see it as something like Return of the Jedi, kind of like end conclusion kind of thing.
So what I'll say is that, what I love is Dave Filoni has a plan.
Yes.
And we can't see the full plan yet, but what has me excited is he has a plan.
Somehow it's going to include Mortis. All right, dog, relax. It's going to include Mortis. Dog. Are you, you don't like Mortis?
No, he doesn't.
Apparently not.
He does not. And that's, do not bring that up again to him. He is those are, upset.
Those are our neighbors, dude. Anyway, so Mortis is obviously being involved. We got Balin staring off in the distance on the father's arm at this like light on a mountain. And I've seen some memes that pretty much confirm that this mountain with the light on it, Anakin also saw in either on like I think it was in the Clone Wars. So this is something that even Anakin saw. So what is this light? What is this thing? Any theories on this?
Oh, I'm trying to think, because I just recently like went back and rewatched those episodes with the father, daughter, and son. Those two episodes, mm-hmm. But I don't know. My brain is just spacing out. But no, I like, because that's part of the lore that I was. I mean, that was the one thing, rewatching those two episodes, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot that, like, the father, like, kind of confined his two children into this, like, other dimension, so, like, pocket dimension, that's what I want to say, because they were so strong that he didn't want them, like, he was afraid they would, like, conquer and take over the galaxy and destroy it kind of thing, so he, like, confined... Like, they all live in this pocket universe because the daughter and the son are so strong. Yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, there's a lot of rumors going on, or fan theories that...
So many fan theories.
Yeah, a lot of fan theories. That, you know, we've got the mother... Or I'm sorry, we got the father, we got the daughter. Maybe we're getting the mother... Ooh. And the mother was actually introduced in, I think, the comics. They talk about it a little bit. And this mother, I'm having a brain fart. I'm trying to find the name real quick. Anyways, apparently she went, like, crazy mad. And she ended up, did I find it? Abeloth, there we go. A powerful cosmic entity linked to the Force gods known as the Ones of Mortis. And so the theory is that the planet may be Abeloth's prison, or her original world before she was abandoned by the Force gods. And that'd be pretty interesting. Is it going to happen? I don't know. But if that's the case, people are saying that Abeloth would be the most powerful Star Wars villain ever created. I guess she was first introduced in Fate of the Jedi novels, set during the New Republic era. Luke Skywalker's New Jedi Order faced Abeloth, a threat far more powerful than the Sith and the Dark Side. However, the books and Abeloth were removed from the official canon following Disney's purchase of Lucasfilm and Star Wars IP back in 2012.
Because that was a dumb thing that Disney did. Anyway, yeah. Sorry, go on.
So Abeloth was once a mortal woman who began serving the Ones as the father strove to keep his children in balance, the son embodying the dark side of the Force, while the daughter representing the light. Eventually, she became part of their family as the mother, helping the father keep the children in balance. However, the woman continued to age, unlike her family of immortals, motivating her decision to drink and swim in the forbidden font of power and pool of knowledge. The mother transformed into the Force, being known as Abeloth, gaining extreme power while also being corrupted and twisted to madness. As such, the father and his children abandoned Abeloth for Mortis as the world became quickly corrupted and darkened. The Ones also created a prison to contain Abeloth, though she would break out Anytime there was a major disruption in the balance of the Force, requiring the son and daughter to work together to imprison her once more. Once the Mortis gods died, as seen in the Clone Wars Season 3, Avaloth was unleashed for good during the New Republic era. So that's what that came about. Huh. Is Baylan... So the theory is Baylan is being called by Avaloth.
Ooh, so he might, like, release her kind of thing?
Yeah, I don't know.
Interesting.
And that... Try to control her to start the cycle all over again, or to destroy the cycle. I don't know.
Yeah. And that makes me like also kind of sad, like, because I want a season two, but man, like, yes. Baylan is still very much a major character, and Ray Stevenson just like did such a good job that I'm genuinely like, ooh, whoever they recast, if like. I hope they better, you know, they'll need to finish that storyline. Like, that actor will have a big shoes to fill. Because Ray Stevenson did such a good job.
Oh, yeah. I don't know who they're going to get for that role. I want them.
I've thought about it. I'm like, I can't think of anyone.
I want them to recast. I don't want to. I don't like Star Wars and these other things that bring in these great characters, and they're like, "Well, the original actor died, so we can't have the character." Has anybody watched a James Bond film?
How about Doctor Who?
Doctor Who. Yeah. It was cool getting C-3PO and Anthony Daniels back.
Yeah, and I did like how they brought in Leia without bringing in Leia.
Yeah, a little bit.
I really liked that, because I was kind of like, there was a point where I was just like, oh, Leia would be around this time. Like, are they going to try to bring her in? Like, are they going to try to recast her? Which, like, you know, I'd be like, okay, you know, I'm okay with recasting. But at the same time, I'm like, Carrie Fisher is just like Leia forever, you know?
Well, but sure. Like, recast.
Just recast.
Recast. Let's just
we love Carrie Fisher.
Don't be scared, Disney.
We need to recast.
But at the same time, like, I really liked how they did that, where they could like have Leia still playing a prominent role without recasting her. So, because if they're gonna do it, I do want them to do it right.
Yeah,
I want them to do a good recast.
Sure, absolutely. And I would even be okay if they decide to do kind of the CGI deep fake face that they did with Luke in Mando season 3.
I would not be okay with that. I don't want that.
Well, they already did it for Rogue One, and Carrie Fisher did see it before she'd passed, and she liked it. So,
but yeah, but that was because, like, I don't know. For me, I feel like it's disrespectful to her at this point because she has passed away.
No,
like,
recast
her face. I don't know. See, that's where I'm like, recast her. Don't just like use her face even though she's passed away. Like, I'm like, because Rogue One, I was like, that okay, that was cool, like trying to redo all that, but she was still alive, you know. So I was like, yeah.
All right, let's wrap up. Any final thoughts on Ahsoka? Jacob,
I was gonna say episode 5 is hands down the best episode.
Oh yeah. Oh, the Clone Wars scenes. Oh, that, just, we didn't. I wanted more Rex though, and I wanted Rex without the helmet on at least once. But I want to know. I want to know where is Rex in all of this? Maybe Rex saves the day and goes and rescues Ahsoka and Sabine in this other galaxy, bringing them back.
Oh yeah, ooh,
that'd be pretty cool.
That's another thing too. Ghost Anakin sitting there at the very end. Mm-hmm. That was so great. Absolutely. That made me happy. I'm like, I like
seeing Hayden did a great job.
I love seeing Hayden Christensen reprising his role as Anakin. I love it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
His scenes were all fantastic. Every single one of them.
Every single one. Yeah.
The thing that I love the most that was said about Hayden is he got to be the fun Anakin we saw in the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cartoon. Definitely. Yeah.
And It hurts because that's the Anakin we could have had all along.
So there's been
The Clone Wars just came after Revenge of the Sith, right?
Mm,
Or was that going on?
Well, yeah. The first Grendi Teska, I can't remember his name. He did Samurai Jack. His Clone Wars stuff came out during episode 2, going into episode 3 timeline. And then, oh, gotcha. Then the other Clone Wars came out after episode 3 came out. There, gotcha. You know, there's been, I guess, I don't know, a lot of people talking online that Disney should be creating a live action Clone Wars series because they've got Ewan McGregor wanting to come back and do more Star Wars. They've got Hayden Christensen coming back and doing more Star Wars. And now they've got this young actress who played young Ahsoka. And they did a good job. You know, I'd be all for it. Even if they just do like, I don't know, like a short, like 4 episode story arc or something. Why not?
Yeah. That'd be so fun.
It would be.
I agree.
Or even Disney make a movie, a Clone Wars movie.
That would be so cool.
It would be so cool.
Love that.
It'd be awesome. So, all right. We've been going on. Ahsoka was awesome for sure. So, well, folks.
Music?
Well, folks.
I was like, I could try to sing it.
that'd be interesting.
That would have been bad. I'll just tell you that.
Well, folks, thanks so much for joining us on another Adventure for Super Nerd podcast. Make sure to hit that podcast subscribe button and leave us a review wherever you're listening to us. Subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever else you find us. Next week, we are, in fact, talking Loki Season 2, the first few episodes. If you have any thoughts on Loki, make sure to hit us up by leaving us a voicemail at anchor.fm/supernerdpodcast, or shoot us an email to supernerdpodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us and reach out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Search Supernerd Podcast. Give us a like, give us a share. But from all of us at Supernerd Podcast, stay nerdy, my friends.
Have fun.
Catch you later.